time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight's terrifying video, I am bringing you five allegedly true national park horror stories. You decide. Now sit back, relax, dim the lights, and let's get spooky. For my own safety, I will be using fake names for people and locations as I describe my experience. Whistleblowers often end up dead, after all. I used to live in a small town nestled up in the mountains, surrounded by a famous national park. Let's call this town Greenville. Being born and raised there, I had an infinity and distinct familiarity with the surrounding mountain and forest. Douglas, a childhood best friend, would accompany me on countless camping and hiking treks through the numerous trails located near our town. Now here's a disturbing fact you may or may not have known. An absurd number of people go missing in national parks and forests every year. A quick Google search will tell you that 1,180 people have gone missing in national parks between 2018 and 2023. That boils down to almost 300 people going missing every year. Why do I bring this up? Well, over a dozen people have gone missing in the national forests around Greenville in the 20-odd years I've lived here. And it's a miracle that Douglas and I don't end up being amongst those numbers. You see, Douglas and I had a few disturbing experiences in that forest over the years. Back in the summer of 1999, we went out with our dads on a camping trip. Being adventurous and reckless kids at the time, Douglas and I snuck off the main trail and got out of sight from our parents. We spent hours playing hide-and-seek in the woods, looking at strange plants and poking at anthills. You know, preteen boy stuff. Well, we started to panic when it got dark and we couldn't find our way back to the trail. "Dad, where are you?" We both cried and called out. Soon the sun had dipped beyond the horizon, blanketing the forest in twilight. "Adam, I'm scared," Douglas said, jumping at the sound of an owl hooting in the distance. I took in a deep breath, looking around and thinking of a way to calm my friend down. That's when we heard something ahead of us. It sounded like the footsteps of a large man running across the brush at full sprint. Focusing my attention to the source of the sound, I scanned the tree line and caught a glimpse of a shadow darting between the tree trunks. Whatever made those huge footsteps moved like lightning between the trees, so fast you could blink and miss it. My heart dropped when I realized this shadow creature was zigzagging its way forward towards where Douglas and I stood. "What the hell is that?" Douglas asked, his voice cracking in panic. Grabbing his arm, I tugged on him and started running in the opposite direction. "I don't know, but we need to get out of here." We ran through the forest, weaving between the trees until my lungs burned from the strain of running. I only looked back once, seeing the creature gaining on us at an alarming rate. For a brief moment, I thought I saw glowing amber eyes attached to the creature's blurry and distorted face. By some miracle, we popped out of the forest and arrived at one of the trails. Flashlights were beaming through the tree line further down the trail, and we both sprinted full speed for the lights. At some point, that creature had stopped chasing us. We eventually ran into the people with the flashlights, who happened to be a search party that our dads had rounded up to go looking for us. Needless to say, we were in a lot of trouble, and they didn't buy our story of being chased by a shadow monster. The next incident happened on my 21st birthday, back in the fall of 2008. My father took me on a camping trip up in the mountains and brought along a bottle of Jack Daniels to celebrate my legal drinking age. The plan was to set up camp, get drunk but not totally hammered, and maybe hunt some squirrel the next morning with my .22 long rifle. Well, we arrive at the campsite, got everything set up, and all seems to be going normal. That is, until nightfall. I had just downed my third shot of whiskey when a screeching sound wailed out in the cold night air. My dad, who was off relieving himself on a tree just outside the glow of the campfire, laughed in response to the noise.
"What's the matter, kiddo? Jack on the rocks too strong for ya?"
He stumbled back over to the campfire, fixing up his zipper on his jeans. "I didn't make that sound," I told him. He raised an eyebrow before grinning at me, like he thought I was messing with him. Just when he was about to say something, that screeching sound erupted into the night air once again. It sounded much closer than before.
"What in the hell?"
my dad shouted, looking around at the darkness surrounding our campsite. He rushed over to his tent and brought out his old lever-action hunting rifle and my comparably tiny .22 long rifle and tossed me the gun. "What was that?" I asked, checking my rifle and turning off the safety. He loaded up a round in his gun and brought it up close to his chest, ready to aim. In all the years I knew my old man, I had never seen his eyes so wide and full of alarm.
"Boy, I don't know," he said, keeping his head on a swivel. "Been hunting out here for years, and I had never heard an animal make a sound like that. Can't be good."
I sat by the campfire, my hands shaking and unable to think of anything to say. Then the sound screeched out a third time, seemingly from somewhere right above me in the tree canopy. Taking me off guard, the screech made me jump back in fear, nearly causing me to soil my pants. If I could describe the sound, it had to be a mixture of a dying coyote and the strained vocal cords of a human child screaming in pain. Well, my dad wasn't having any of it. When he heard that sound booming from right above where I sat, he cursed and took aim with his rifle. The blast temporarily lit up the surrounding woods with the muzzle flash and sent a crack echoing through the wilderness. Following the gunshot, I heard a loud thud on the forest floor, as if something heavier than a grizzly bear had just jumped out of the highest tree branch. Heavy footsteps followed, indicating something had broken out into a full sprint heading away from our campsite. We didn't get any sound sleep that night despite having some alcohol in us, and luckily, the rest of the trip went by uneventful. The final experience I'll talk about before I reveal the truth is a gruesome one, so if you're squeamish, please be warned. A few years ago, a young woman went missing in the woods around Greenville. She was a local of the town, so everyone had come together to form a search party to look for her. That's just what we were about. A small town with a close-knit community, and we looked out for each other. Douglas and I decided to join the search party, and we were assigned to comb through a far northeastern section of the woods. We scoured the woods, calling out that woman's name for hours. "Jessica, are you out here?" She never turned up. Eventually, it got late and we had to turn back. even though we brought flashlights along, the search party advised us not to go too far out at night since it could risk more people getting turned around and lost. Remembering the other chilling experiences I had in the forest at night, I had no problem with that stipulation. Douglas, on the other hand, didn't quite agree, and indeed grew irritated that we had to back up and leave before nightfall. You see, Douglas had a bit of a romantic interest in Jessica, so his motivation to find her ran deeper than mine, which is exactly why he stopped when he saw a small cave nestled between the trees on the side of a mountain. This cave wasn't unusual. There were plenty of them all over the mountain hidden within the forest, which made excellent hibernation dens for the local black bears. For that reason, I admittedly protested when Douglas suggested we go looking in the cave for Jessica. "Come on, maybe she took shelter in there. We gotta at least look." He drew closer to the cave, taking out the flashlight and shining it through the maw. At this point, twilight had crept in, and detouring through a possible bear cave was the last thing I wanted to do. "You want to go in there? Fine. I'll stay out here and wait." I gave him a dead serious look. He scowled and turned to enter the cave, calling me a coward and a few other choice names as he entered. Taking a seat on a nearby rock, I waited and kept the flashlight on, pointing at the cave. It drew darker, and my anxiety began to rise. What was only a few minutes had felt like hours. When the silver glint of the moon began to peek through the tree canopy, I cursed and turned to face the cave. "Doug, are you done looking around yet?" My voice echoed back from the cave. Just when I thought there wouldn't be a response, I heard my own voice speaking back to me. It was the same exact thing, albeit a much lower, almost choppy and broken sounding voice. "Doug, are you done looking around yet?" Frozen in place, I didn't know what to think. I heard my echo, and then the voice of something repeating my words back. I could feel my heart exploding in my chest as I turned to examine the forest around me. While I had my back turned to the cave, I heard Douglas scream. Quickly shining my flashlight back to the entrance, I heard his footsteps crashing on stone as he raced out of the darkness. His breathing had been elevated to hyperventilating levels, and he spoke incoherent nonsense.
"Dude, it's horrible. Dude.
He fell to his knees, sobbing uncontrollably as he dropped the flashlight. "Whoa, calm down. Just breathe and tell me what's wrong." He continued crying nonstop, unable to piece together words. I sat there rubbing his back, glancing back at the cave and wondering what he saw. When his sobbing grew softer, another noise began to grab my attention. It was a wet, uncomfortable mouth-slapping sound. Think of a big dog chewing on a piece of raw meat. When I realized the sound came from the maw of the cave, I raised my light at the entrance and felt all the blood drain from my body. A tall, humanoid shadow stood inside the cave. Amber eyes locked with mine, and I watched in absolute horror and disgust as long, lanky, and inhuman arms ripped flesh straight off of a dismembered human leg. Blood dripped off the severed body part as the creature took the bite of flesh and stuffed it into its mouth. I couldn't even make out on its oblong head. Then I heard that wet, deeply uncomfortable chewing noise as that thing ate the raw human flesh. At some point, Douglas must have noticed the creature because he broke out screaming at the top of his lungs. I screamed with him, and we both ran as fast as our feet would allow. Fortunately, that thing did not follow. I am now convinced that what I saw in the forest was a Wendigo. You see, After all my traumatic experiences, I've grown an affinity to research the paranormal and the unknown. The Wendigo is a creature known for feasting on the flesh of humans, and seems to best fit the description of what I saw in the forest that day. Now here's an interesting twist. The Wendigo has long been said to have a weakness against fire, silver, and cold weather. The reason I mention this is because the National Forest around Greenville suffered a catastrophic wildfire back in 2021. Since then, disappearances in the area have stopped. But there's more. In my last year of living in Greenville, just weeks before the fire, a group of strange people arrived at our town. They drove all black cars with government license plates. At the time, I was just working as a volunteer for the Park Ranger Service. These strange people came to the Park Ranger's office, asking a few questions to my boss, and disappearing off into the woods for hours before coming back and just abruptly leaving. 6 days later, the forest fire that would devastate Greenville and the surrounding mountain would begin. Call me a conspiracy theorist, but I firmly believe that the government stepped into a Wendigo crisis unfolding around Greenville, and their solution was to burn it all down. Have you ever felt that the forest is staring back at you? Not the rustling leaves or the nocturnal sounds, but a presence. An unseen entity that breathes with the trees and whispers through the shadows. I've spent decades patrolling these woods as a park ranger, a witness to nature's beauty and brutality. But what I encountered out there, lurking beneath the canopy, made me question everything I thought I knew. It was late October. The trees were adorned in hues in crimson and gold, and the air held a biting chill. I received a distress call from a group of hikers who claimed they were lost in the woods. My gut told me something was off, a primal instinct that stirred unease within me. Ignoring protocol, I ventured alone into the maze of ancient trees, their twisted branches casting elongated shadows. As I navigated the labyrinth trails, the silence became suffocating. No bird calls, no rustling leaves, just an eerie hush that clung to the air. I felt as though the forest was holding its breath, waiting for something. I pushed forward, my senses on high alert, my hand resting on the grip of my revolver. That's when I saw her. A woman, standing in the middle of the trail, her long hair obscuring her face. She was dressed in a flowing white gown that seemed to glow in the dim light filtering through the trees. But there was something about her that made my skin crawl. "Ma'am, are you lost?" I called out, my voice echoing through the forest. No answer. I took a few cautious steps forward, my heart pounding against my chest. The woman remained still, her face still obscured by her hair. As I got closer, I could see that her skin was deadly pale, almost translucent. "Ma'am, I'm a park ranger. Are you okay?" Suddenly, the woman's head snapped up, her hair falling away from her face. Her eyes were black as coal, and her lips twisted into a sinister smile. I gasped, taking a step back as she started to move towards me with an inhuman grace. I raised my gun, but I knew it would be useless against this otherworldly creature. The woman stopped, still grinning wickedly.
"You shouldn't have come here,"
she hissed, her voice laced with a hint of amusement.
"This forest belongs to us now."
"Us?" The word echoed through my mind, sending shivers down my spine. I'd heard stories of supernatural beings inhabiting the woods, but I never believed them. Until now. I watched in horror as the woman transformed before my very eyes. Her skin rippled, bones cracking as she grew taller and her limbs elongated. Wings unfurled from her back, translucent and iridescent, like those of a dragonfly. Her eyes glowed with an otherworldly light, and her mouth stretched impossibly wide to reveal rows of glistening razor-sharp teeth. I stumbled backwards, tripping over a tree root and hitting the ground hard. The creature loomed over me as she regarded me with soulless black eyes. Before I could react, she lunged at me, her teeth sinking into my shoulder. I screamed, unable to comprehend the pain that tore through me. She pulled away, blood dripping from her jaws as she laughed, a sound that echoed through the forest like a death knell. I collapsed in shock, clutching my wound and rolling to my side. I searched frantically, but I was alone again, thankfully. Or not. I tried to radio for help and got nothing but static. My heart dropped as I realized I was going to die out here, alone and forgotten. Just another casualty in this godforsaken forest. My attacker's laughter echoed through the trees around me. That's when I realized I was still losing blood, and fast. The pain was slowly subsiding, my body weakening with every passing moment. Even if I wanted to get up and run, I wouldn't make it far. I was about to close my eyes for the last time when I heard a sound in the distance. It was faint, but unmistakable. A child's laughter. I turned my head, and through the haze, I could see a little boy standing in the middle of the trail, perhaps 100 feet away. He looked to be about 8 years old, with messy brown hair and a tattered shirt. He stared at me with the eyes the color of the sky, and I recognized him instantly. My own son, who had died in a car accident years ago.
"Chris," I whispered, "is that really you?"
I felt a spark of hope ignite in my chest.
"Do you know the way out of here?"
I asked frantically. The boy just stared at me from the safety of the tree line, those same pools of unnatural darkness where his eyes should have been.
"Why did you kill me, Daddy?"
The boy's voice reverberated as though he was whispering directly into my ear. I froze, my mind reeling as I tried to process what had happened.
"What are you talking about?"
I asked the boy, my voice trembling.
"You heard me. You killed me in the car accident, remember? I told you not to drink and drive, but you did it anyways."
"You shouldn't have done that, Daddy. You promised you wouldn't leave me." The boy's voice was tinged with anger, the same way mine would have been if I was scolding him. I remember that night all too clearly. I'd been a little tipsy, but I could still drive. But in my inebriated state, I made a stupid decision to drive over the speed limit. A decision I would have never have made if my son hadn't been with me. A decision that cost him his life.
"You killed me, Daddy. Now we're both trapped here in this forest, and we will never get out."
I awoke in the hospital, apparently for the second time. The doctor said I had to be restrained and sedated the first time because I woke up crying, screaming my son's name over and over. I tried to make sense of what had happened. By the time my colleagues found me near the trail, I had nearly bled out. It was a miracle I survived. But I couldn't forget the words my son said to me, even now, all these years later. Despite my injuries, and regardless of the knowledge it couldn't really have been him, I'm going back there tonight. If I could just see him, maybe talk to him one more time, it would be worth it. No matter what happens to me.
Hey everyone.
I hope this post is appropriate for this sub. Last summer, I quit my job as a professor. We rented out our home and used that income to move into the woods of southern Oregon on our fifth wheel. My husband has a good job and I freelance. One of the ways I contribute to the household is working as a camp host 3 days a week in the RV park we live in. In exchange for free rent and utilities, I always just make reservations. But it means I get to spend more time outside talking to others. There have been a few spooky events happened that I wanted to share. I don't see too many RV park stories here, so I was hoping others would also have stories to share. 1. Mysterious flute plane. Our park is in the middle of nowhere in the middle of the woods. A small hill towers over us on one side, covered with impenetrable trees, and a river is on the other. At least 3 times a week, we hear what sounds like a flute or recorder playing for an hour or so at a time. Sometimes, it comes from the deep woods. Sometimes, from the river. I brought it up to a resident who had been staying here since 04, Pat. She strongly advised me to ignore it and not to mention it. 2. Scraping sound at night. I posted this on another sub, and it was removed because the mods believed it to be fiction. But it's not. About once a week, I heard a scraping sound dragging along the ground through the park towards the deep woods. My husband has heard it, but no one else. Interestingly, the park ring alerts me that someone is standing in front of the office when I hear the sound, but the camera doesn't pick anything up. Because I hate the ring going off when cars drive by, I have it set to when someone needs to be standing on the office porch to generate an alert. 3. Late night caller. We regularly get calls after dark asking us for a space for the night at the last minute. I take their credit card over the phone and use a map to direct them to a space without leaving my trailer. The park owner, Debbie, explains that she didn't want me having to help any late night arrivals after dark. In fact, she makes it a strict rule that we're not allowed to answer the phone at all between midnight and 6 a.m. Discussing this rule with Pat, she said something about how careful camp hosts need to be about those who we invite into the campground. Random things. I'm in charge of selecting long-term residents if we have any open spaces. I review criteria such as applicant jobs, size and age of their rig, etc. While children are welcome to visit the park for short stays, no one with kids is allowed to move in on a monthly, yearly basis. Debbie hasn't even given me a reason for this. The park was built by a wood carver. There are massive and strange-looking totems, sculptures, carved doors, etc. all over the property. This all being said, our park is a slice of heaven. I love taking my dogs to swim in the river, watching wild mushrooms grow, listening to the sound of the rain with just a thin roof between us. Also, I feel very safe here. I'm becoming more open to the idea that the woods could just be weird in some ways I don't always get. I'd love to know your thoughts about any of these blurbs or hear your own RV park stories. I've always had an inexplicable fascination with the supernatural. My friends, Sarah and Mark, share my love for the occult. So when we decided to go on a camping trip to the remote Blackwood Forest, supposedly super haunted, but I couldn't have been more thrilled. It had been a couple of weeks since the group made plans to venture into the wilderness of Blackwood. I spent these weeks preparing for the trip. I bought a new tent, a sleeping bag, and stocked up on supplies. As always, Sarah and Mark were in high spirits. We were laughing and joking around the whole way there. We arrived and set out on a hike to find a campsite, and we found a spot a few miles in. We set up camp and started a fire. We were telling ghost stories and roasting marshmallows. The first night was great. We spent the next morning hiking, exploring the woods, getting a real feel for the area. It was a blast, and it felt great to be in the outdoors. Nothing out of the ordinary for being in an area with such an unusual lure revolving it. Until later that night, we ended the day the same way as the previous one, telling ghost stories by the fire and roasting marshmallows, and we went to bed. I awoke only an hour later to the sound of shuffling and branches breaking near my tent. I decided to investigate, and I turned on my phone's flashlight and unzipped my tent and stepped out, and to my surprise, both Mark and Sarah's tents were wide open and empty. They were nowhere to be found. Against my better judgment, I headed into the woods in search of my friends. My flashlight casting eerie shadows on the trees as I'm walking. The air was thick and musty, and I could hear strange noises coming from somewhere in the distance. My heart was racing, but I couldn't turn back now. I went towards the sound. As I walked, I saw movement out of the corner of my eye. I spun around, but there was nothing there. I shrugged it off and kept moving, and the noises grew louder, and I started to hear whispers. I stopped dead in my tracks as I saw them. Dozens of people, some dressed in old-fashioned clothing, some dressed in more recent attire, and there was Sarah and Mark with them too. They were gathered around in a large circle in the middle of a clearing of trees, chanting in an unknown language, and I could feel the hairs on the back of my neck start to stand up. Who were these people, and why are Mark and Sarah with them? Something isn't right. I wanted to turn and run, but my body wouldn't obey. I was paralyzed with fear, unable to move or even scream for help. The people in the circle started to look up, their eyes locking onto mine. But something was wrong. As my eyes focused, I realized there was something even more unnatural about what I was looking at. And then my heart dropped at the realization. There were just gaping holes where their eyes were supposed to be. Just eye sockets. No eyes. Empty cold stares looking deep within my soul. My thoughts were running. Did they do that to Sarah and Mark? Why are they with them? This had to be a nightmare. I need to wake up. And then, as if it was a chain reaction, a smile lit on Sarah's face, then Mark's, and it spread one by one around the group. This was no ordinary smile. It was a smile so wide that their jaws would crack and become mangled to fit its extreme width. A smile so unsettling, I would want to physically harm my own eyes just not to see it anymore. And they welcomed me with open arms. I love the forest, and I don't see how anyone couldn't. The chirping of the birds and rustling of leaves drew me like a fly to honey. A poet once said, "A man's soul lies within the trees," and I'd be inclined to agree. Near my home was a national park with plenty of trails, creeks, and caves, a beautiful place in the Daniel Boone National Forest. Long stretches of nothing but nature and its beauty. I never understood some people's fear or hate of the woods until a few months ago. A cold April morning, I was off of work. For the first time in my busy life for the past few weeks, I didn't have to commute to Louisville. I could stay in my small town and enjoy the bachelor life as best as I could. I went out onto the trail that morning. Athletic shorts and a t-shirt, embracing the cold air rather than being opposed to it. I set out on the paved gravel trail from the parking lot, up past the yellow upon brown sign welcoming you to the National Forest. The parking lot behind me was pretty empty that morning. One or two cars on the far side, a park ranger's Crown Vic, the ranger sitting on his hood and enjoying a cup of Joe. I was glad to know I'd have the trail mostly to myself. and so I broke out onto a jog, earbuds set in and the volume pumping up. The trees breezily shook in the morning air, the sun clouded out. Overcast, maybe rain later. I huffed and shook my head, continuing on down the trail. I passed another jogger at one point, and we shared waves, but I saw no one else for a while. I think a half an hour passed, judging by how many songs I had cycled through, until I came upon a big bend fork, a split in the trail leading up the two different paths. One path was a little more overgrown, and I'd only been up there a few times. It led past an old grill and bench, along with an abandoned power box shack, which had since been transferred to the other path, my normal one, which went past some campgrounds and a fishing dock. However, to my surprise, a park ranger was there, armed, what looked like a tranquilizer rifle in his hands. He seemed to be guarding the trail and keeping an eye out. I stopped my jog and took the earbuds out, asking him what exactly was wrong. Luckily, it wasn't anything too scary. A few large bears had been spotted wandering around and upon the campgrounds up ahead, a mother and father and cubs, and they had ripped up a vacant tent of another hiker. Black bears aren't the most dangerous bears, not at all, but with cubs, the parents tend to be highly protective. Better safe than sorry, the ranger told me, and that the trail should reopen the next day when they could relocate the bears deeper into the woods. Another ranger had headed up the second path and reported nothing abnormal, so he ensured me it was safe. The path that way was shorter and would probably let me finish my jog before the rain came, but I had no choice. I jogged along the other path and up into the more outgrown part of the park, and hoped the storms would be delayed long enough for me to finish my jogging routine. Another half an hour or so along the gravel path, grass started to overcome it further on up. It clearly saw some level of disuse, that much was clear. I reached the rusty bench and felt my legs begin to give out. Time for a break. I slowed my pace down and walked off the trail to the bench, taking a seat and giving my body a rest. My head tilted up to the sky and I shut my eyes, lost in the world of 80s music. I'm not sure how long I sat there, but after a while I started to smell something. Something wafted over to me and I couldn't tell what it was. It seemed to be coming further up the trail, near the power shed. Whatever it was, I hopped off the bench begrudgingly, stretching out and doing a few toe touches before continuing on the trail. The smell became more pervasive as I made my way further up, and I started seeing some kind of material along the trail. Bits of red, black, and some gray. Strolling along the sides of the trail in odd patterns, I stopped and picked a few pieces up. Pieces of black hair stuck to them thanks to static. They were pieces of tarp. Maybe from that fence? It would make sense. They continued up the grassy trail towards the distant power shed. Something told me not to check, that it may be the bears. But I knew there was another ranger out here, so I carried on. That was when the smell got worse. The smell got worse, and I could see red spray on the grass. Reddishness over parts of the tarp leading up the old, rusty, cream-colored shed building. I could tell from the trail that the shed door was open, and that the trail of the paint, or God no, it couldn't have been blood, I thought. But I followed it. Breaking off the trail, I walked up to the shack, which itself had a small gravel trail, a sign on the wall reading, "Keep Out," rusted and grimy. The smell was unbearable by now, and I could see what it was. Behind the shed, off to the angle I couldn't see from the trail, was a large black body. Hairy, fat, animal-like, and ripped open. Flies massed around it. I put my hand over my mouth, holding back the urge to vomit. I got a better view of it as I closed into the shed and could tell its face, its skin there. Parts of it was ripped clean off, leaving bone or muscle or flesh behind, but no skin. However, the red trail didn't go to the bear. It went inside the shed. The door was open slightly, and the shed itself wasn't too big nor too small. It could hold a few power terminals and breaker boxes, and could hold up to 8 or 9 men standing together. The smell got even worse. Flies buzzed around it as I neared the door. Every instinct told me to turn back, and I nearly did, until I heard a chewing noise. A chomping, splitting chewing sound. A breathing, a shuddering, like a human. I thought someone may be getting attacked by an animal. I couldn't just leave, not if they were in danger. I pressed the door open, slowly but surely, pale light from the outside beaming in, dust particles scattering from it as more the room was opened up and illuminated. The old power boxes and monitoring systems were dusty, destroyed, long since vandalized and abandoned. The red trail continued, blackened and thick inside the shed to a dark corner. I could make out a silhouette in the dark. Something huddled, or maybe sitting or laying. I couldn't tell. My hand remained over my mouth. The smell absolutely unbearable by now, but I pushed the door further open. The sounds of the chewing stopped, and as the wave of light rushed over from the open door, I wish I hadn't been there. A man, but not a man, a humanoid maybe, sat there. His palms were bloody and bony. Bear claws shoved into his fingers where nails had seemingly been ripped off. His body was pale and patchy with thick hair and what seemed to be fur, some gray and some falling out, some black and fresh. As I looked over his or its full body, I noticed then what gave me chills to this day. The bear's face was badly plastered over his own skull, his eyes pale and features gaunt. Bits and pieces of mutilated bear attached to his own body, his nose ripped off and left with a poorly filled black one of the bear I'd seen outside. Further in the corner behind him, the unmistakable off-violet uniform of a Kentucky Park Ranger. His legs, or what were left of them, stuck out, his chest completely torn open and his entrails hanging from the thing's fingers. A look of terror and of shock was solidified on his half-eaten face. The thing stared at me, head tilted in curiosity. I was absolutely silent, as was it, like we were locked into some kind of staring contest, like it was looking upon me with the same shock and awe I was looking upon it. Then it smiled, a toothy, bloody grin. Its mottled yellow teeth jagged and barely fitting together. My blood went cold. I couldn't move. I couldn't speak. But a sudden lightning strike and a rumble of thunder from the coming storm broke the silence, and it startled me. I couldn't help but scream, losing my cool in that one moment. The creature didn't like that. He didn't like that at all. Maybe he perceived me as a threat, or as prey, but it let out a howl, an unnatural howl, and it lunged off the floor. I was startled, but I had been running and jogging since middle school, and as soon as it started moving, I took off into a sprint down the trail and back the way I came, away from the shed, away from whatever the hell was chasing me, but it screamed like a banshee and ran like one too. I could hear its footsteps right behind me, its bestial primordial grunts and screaming as it pursued me. I lost all track of time as I ran, all senses of being. Adrenaline rushing through me and I was on autopilot. I sprinted for what seemed like an eternity until I nearly reached the Big Bend Fork. I looked behind me to see if I could still see it, but I couldn't. I couldn't see anything behind me for the length of the trail. But I didn't see something in front of me and I tripped. I fell on something hard but soft, fleshy and squishy, and immediately felt very warm all across the front of my body and my face, warm and uncomfortably slick. I struggled to stand, but my hands only met something squishy, a mass of wetness and disgusting slimy surfaces. I sat up from whatever it was and could only see red. I wiped my eyes clean and then discovered I had fallen upon the corpses of a park ranger. On his back, his face ripped to absolute shreds, his abdomen torn open and half of his torso ripped off. I screamed louder than I ever had in my life and scrambled up to my feet, standing over this mutilated corpse until I heard the familiar banshee cry from behind me. I looked over my shoulder and that smell hit me again, the smell of this creature. I then remembered. "The rifle," I said, thinking out loud, and looked to the ground. Sure enough, the bloody rifle of the park ranger just laid off the trail. I grabbed it and checked it. It was loaded, and it was an actual gun, not just some tranquilizing tool that I initially thought. Low caliber, but good enough for me. I couldn't check if it was loaded or if the safety was on, but I aimed it up the trail just as that beast of a man was gaining distance on me. It looked more horrific in the open light, and I could see every vein, every patch of mottled and rotted flesh, the blood streaming from where he'd had attached the mutilated bear parts. I shut my eyes, expecting death to be coming, but I pulled the trigger. A loud crack resonated throughout the forest. I don't know if I hit the thing or not, but I heard a howl and the rustling of leaves. I opened my eyes after a moment, and I looked ahead. It was gone. Nothing beside me, behind me, or in front of me. The rustling of bushes got quiet until there was absolute silence. Me with this rifle standing above a dead man. Utter silence. I stood there like a statue, rifle still aimed, finger on the trigger, and I waited. I thought it would ambush me. I thought it was waiting for me. But another rumble of thunder woke me from this frozen position. Droplets, then a sprinkle of rain began to fall, and without any further consideration of the situation, I took off running back down the trail. Minutes seemed like an eternity, and my body slowly gave out from the sprint. I couldn't push myself any longer, and soon I became in sight of the parking lot through the trees. I mustered up my best jog to safety, down the trail and out to the pavement, but then I noticed it was no longer empty. Three Ranger cruisers were parked in a wall-like fashion against the trail. I was panting, my vision blurry as my body continued to recoil from the fierce push I'd been put through. But I remember seeing a man behind the cars, black and white cars, weapons aimed at me. Were they police? Rangers? Had someone called them here? I don't know. I couldn't think. "Drop it!" was the last clear phrase I heard before I collapsed to the pavement. The patter of rain on my blood-soaked clothing, the final thing I heard before it all faded away. I blacked out entirely. I didn't sleep well nor feel well. Even when they let me out of the hospital I woke up in. Because all that awaited me was the ride back to the police station truck to the local detention center. Details were fuzzy, and it all seemed like a blur. But the looks I got from some of the cops told me what I needed to know. I appeared in court not long after. 2 counts of first-degree murder of 2 Kentucky Park Rangers. They never found the bodies of the mangled bear nor the ranger in the shed, but with my clothing caked in blood and a crimson splattered weapon in my hand, I was the only possible suspect to them. With the huge amount of blood found at the shed and 1 dead ranger left on the trail, I was to blame. I tried to plead my story, I wanted to, but even running it in my head sounded ridiculous. What, that a bear man had killed both the men? And I was only out for a jog? That my DNA was on the corpse of one and his blood was on me because I tripped and fell on him? An idiot might believe that, but sadly for me, the justice system wasn't as dumb as some people say it is. It's been 8 months since I was placed in this prison. 8 months that I've had to wear this jumpsuit. Shit in an open toilet. Shower in a public shower. Eat the slop that they give us. 8 months because of my curiosity and my love of jogging. They're still doing tests and trying to determine every possible factor, but their search across the forest turned up no signs of the dead ranger. No other body to prove the case that I had nothing to do with the deaths of these men. Hell, they thought I was potentially insane, with the trauma that I had that day showing through, and my story of the monstrous bear man being the murderer. My assigned therapist gave me this journal to write my thoughts in, and even if I'm not insane, it still comforts me to write this story. It comforts me to know that maybe, just maybe, I'll be proven innocent, and I'll get out of this place and back to my normal life. But I'll never go jogging in the woods again. That other man couldn't have killed the first ranger I met. He was at the shed. There are multiple things out there in those woods. Old things that maybe not even Appalachian folklore speak of. Spooks and monsters existing as shadows amongst the trees, howling at night, shrieks in the morning, figures in the fog. The things grizzled hunters speak of when clutching a rifle to their side. They're still out there. Word of advice to you? Be careful what trails you go hiking on. You never know what you'll find.